I would now like to call Mikhail Kamela.
I'm very pleased that I can go, that I can be here. I'm a little nervous. Perhaps I could tell my story. I'm 43, and when I was 25, for the first time, I came into a psychiatric ward. And my first diagnosis was religious madness. And the second or third time, it was changed into schizophrenia. And you have to imagine that the doctor of that time, who's now a professor, that I was called to him because he didn't tell my parents the diagnosis. Well, the parents didn't tell me my diagnosis. And I said, "Doctor, what is my diagnosis?" And then he demonstratively looked out of the window and said, "You're schizophrenic." And then I said, "As a working thesis." And he said, "No, not as a working thesis, as a diagnosis." And I said, "Right, well, that in itself is a crushing statement." Another crushing statement was that he said that you have to take this medication for 5 years, which, as we know, in the case of neuroleptics, Haldol, Sisalinol, these are basically things you take for life. Even today, among many doctors and pharmaceutical companies, there are these brochures in which it says, one psychosis, 2 years neuroleptics, two or three, then three or four, and if you've got three diagnoses, then you have to take them for life. And these brochures are paid by Janssen, Eli Lilly, and whatever all these companies are called. The crimes, dear forum and members of the audience, continue. For me, it's very dangerous to say that I'm talking about crimes here, because I am one of the heads of a psychiatric, people with survivors of the psychiatric system in Austria, and many, if you say you're talking about a crime, then we won't speak to you anymore. But these are crimes. Why are they crimes? I haven't been able to listen to all of the witnesses, but I think I'm a little bit different from the ones I have heard, because I am mad. But I'm not of the opinion that the psychiatric wards are the right place for me. I don't think that my craziness, the word is sort of shifted in German, shifted from the norm is the word for crazy. I don't think it's a medical problem. But I don't see it that people who are mad don't need help. During the break, I allowed myself a little psychosis. I went through Berlin, a city that I don't just love, but also respect and honor. And I read somewhere some kind of a slogan and another few, and one of them was, life is worth living, otherwise it wouldn't be life, or something like that. And I mean, that sounded very Austrian. And then I saw another little saying, somehow everyone's a little bit sick, thank God. And these two slogans or sayings were written by the Good Soldier Schweik, which is a novel. It's being turned into a play and played here. And I think there's a certain synchronicity here. It's sort of greetings from beyond. And this is something I experienced very strongly in my psychoses. And people always said to me, this is relational madness. You're just imagining this. This is only happening to you because you're in a psychosis. Things happened to me that, for example, a hearse took me away. And the next car stopped, and it was a bus and took me away. And then when I said, I'm concerned about this, I was extremely concerned, very worried. I would have liked someone to have been there to tell me, but it was 1983 that I first became, quote unquote, psychotic. And at that time, the concept of synchronicity wasn't around in the public sphere. So something that worries me, Paulo Coelho is sitting here as a successful person, and I'm very grateful that he's here. And what's different between him and someone who has also come into contact with his creativity, but is still wandering around lost in madness? And I really caused trouble at home and elsewhere. I was flooded, as it were. There's this talk, where it is, I must become. And I think where it is in the psychosis, the S, doesn't have to become the Über-Ich. And I have a sustainable complaint to psychiatry that people who come to them with a problem, that they are chronically crippled, that they don't listen to them, they cripple them. They don't listen to what we people have experienced, and it really is the case. This, as it came from the audience, it is almost impossible to talk about what I have experienced and what we have experienced. Why? Because it goes beyond the horizon and the imaginable that people have. A woman called Ebriana, who it seems has, there's a play about as well. In this book here, you can get it downstairs. The Case Against Neuroleptics, the Something of Humanity, didn't catch the title. She talks about how awful it is, neuroleptics, the fact that you can't talk about them. And I don't even think that neuroleptics are the crime in themselves. There have always been some kind of medication or medicine to make people numb or desensitize them. But a doctor cannot use them against someone's will. The situation starts in the beginning, in the initial discussion, when I say how I am and everything I say is used against me. I mean, that's schizophrenic. That's destructive. And there is no stigmatization without the person who is concerned, or rather, there's no destigmatization without the person being in the middle. And until coercion is taken away, you cannot have destigmatization. The crime in psychiatry did not begin in psychiatry. It began before that. We've heard a lot about standardization, conformity, a society in which it is no longer possible to talk about certain things is a poor society. And it means that the people who experience these things and cannot talk about them have a very difficult time. Perhaps there's some kind of glasnost, some sort of improvement in things, the fact that we can speak here, but I don't want to be too euphoric about it, because the questions that the panel ask are often very strange. Questions like, yes, but didn't you at home sort of have a little bit of weird things? I mean, this isn't the problem. You can see that sometimes you're missing the point, going right past the point. I think it's very nice that Paulo Coelho is smiling a little bit. I have been trying since 1976, and it was 1978 that I was first in Berlin. Ivan Illich really made a big impact on me. I saw him here. I hadn't seen him for 20 years. And I'm trying to be a warrior of the heart. And the problems were that Whenever I went into psychiatry and was vitriolic, people didn't understand me because I was too quick with my symbols, and they didn't understand my chain of association. But what I want to say is, the big pharmaceutical companies are trying to make human problems, well, they're trying to solve human problems in an industrial mass way. And this is a very dangerous and impossible path. And for this reason, we must. I perhaps need to say as well, I've been told that for my whole life I have to take pharmaceuticals, neuroleptics, the worst time, and I haven't taken any for 8 years. And 10 years ago I was in a psychiatric ward. I've been in 20 times. And 40 friends of mine did not have the same luck that I had. They are no longer alive. It's really not much fun. They're dead. Many die of a number of illnesses that, as a doctor, you cannot, the doctors are not connecting or not linking with neuroleptics. But where the S is, the ich has to come, but we mustn't destroy this S. And this is the message of psychosis to society, that it's screwed up normality, and it's the shield that Wilhelm Reich talked about, that they should really have a look at it, the defense shield. But what do they do? I just came back from Klagenfurt, from a schizophrenics workshop, and there was a pharma company there. Effect knows no compromise. Effect knows no compromise. That was the effect. And this basic attitude is one that I would like to warn you against in psychiatry. If it's successful, then we need to do something against this. I have been a victim of this basic attitude, which in this quote comes across a psychiatric case. What is that? Even that is inhumane. A psychiatric case is made into a neuroleptic case, or as one nurse said, Michelle, don't be sad. Some people have bad livers. You've got, you're brain sick. If you think I have a sick brain, all right. So be it. Of course, I could give you 1,000 facts about the time I've spent in psychiatric wards. Perhaps you have some questions. Let me just see if I've made a few little notes here. I'm in favor of multiversification, not just globalization generally, but in daily life. It really is the case that your way of seeing reality can get you put away. What happened to me is I was flooded with things. I wanted to go to do a pilgrimage to Israel and to sort out the Middle East problem. And a friend of mine said, come with me to Jerusalem. And I ended up in a psychiatric ward. I said, I don't know anything, but I think they just gave me a forced injection of neuroleptics, and then there I was, schizophrenic. I'm very pleased that I have see Kate Millett, because she's an example that you can support people that you don't even know, because reading her books really give you strength. And it's like she said before, the belief in it, the power of the it. And the terrible thing is that your social context is taken away because the stigma is there. You have to imagine you put on 20 or 30 kilos of weight from neuroleptics, and this has a real impact on your self-esteem. At this point, I would like to say I come from Vorarlberg. It's a very beautiful part of Austria, but in this state with 350,000 inhabitants, 8,000 people a year are subjected to electroshocks. Even up to 2 years ago, I was told that it's only people who cannot be taken out of their depressions. I asked for an electroshock brochure, or I got one, and the methods of the doctors are in there. They are manipulating, they are revolting, their sort of persuasion tactics that they use. I would like to give the Russell Tribunal an example of this. I admire Russell very much. I will pass on this brochure to you. Have a look at it. Have a look at what, you know, these kings, König, and Link, what they say about electroshocks. Somebody there recently told me that they are really in favor of them. Electroshocks in all psychiatric diagnoses, schizophrenia, manic depression, all of them. Neuroleptics you have to take afterwards, but a good shock won't hurt anyone. A terrible time. That's all I wanted to say. That's my statement.
Thank you very much. Okay. Questions? Yes, Alon Heber.
Alon Harel from the Hebrew University. You mentioned the relation between coercion and stigmatization. Could you elaborate on this? And do you think that the coercion is a necessary condition for stigmatization, or do you think that stigmatization wouldn't have taken place had coercion not taken place, and why? I mean.
Stigmatization takes place basically when somebody is admitted to a psychiatric ward, and you automatically then become stigmatized. That's de facto. De facto is the way it operates. That's my personal experience.
Taken simply by being treated by. I mean, I wonder about it because I know people who have been treated by psychiatrists and have been stigmatized without being forcibly taken to hospitals.
Die Stigmatisierung.
Stigmatization does not come about as a result of coercion, but as a result of admission to a psychiatric ward. Do you have friends, and how do you treat them? Yes, I do indeed have friends. I have a large number of friends and acquaintances, and I would say 80% of them have experienced psychiatric treatment themselves. And as regards the others, although from 1983 to 1997 I had spent considerable amounts of time in psychiatric treatment, they weren't aware of the fact. I don't tell everybody straight away, but I do indeed, yes, have friends.
Please.
Lieber Michael, freue mich dich zu treffen.
Michael, glad to see you. We met about 6 months ago, a contact from Vorarlberg to Munich. I'd like to make a brief remark here. It has to do with your presentation here. As a young person, in my case, I was 20 years of age. The diagnosis is endogenous psychosis. This is like a sword of Damocles, if you like, if not a death sentence. I'm very pleased I didn't listen to the doctors. From 1976 onwards, the report probably landed up on the rubbish heap. But at the same time, I had the misfortune to respond very badly to neuroleptic drugs. And as a result, I returned to a psychiatric clinic in 1993. It was a reversible or irreversible disease. And therefore, I was a psychiatric case or a neurological case, and occasionally I felt better as a schizophrenic than suffer from this other treatment, and have a reduced life expectancy as a result of the treatment that I have suffered, and in the meantime, this visible stigma has been enhanced by people laughing at me. But Berlin's a different size city, so compliment to Berlin in that respect. I've suffered less humiliation here. It's taken me years to come to grips with my personal situation. Sometimes when you're sat down or standing up, sometimes I can't write properly. I've been told that I won't be able to complete my studies as a result of this treatment, although that's not actually true. I studied social studies. Another brief point in conclusion. The statement put forward,
or even worse, that these people don't deserve, maybe in the sense.
Fled there from a temporary home for the psychologically ill.
Thank you very much. Whoever is standing out of my line of vision.
Anna Koszmierska, I come from Poland. First of all, the Russell Tripoli is something new for me. I haven't heard so much about it in the past. Perhaps somebody can tell me what are the subjects the Russell Tribunal addresses, because at the moment I can see psychiatry. There are probably other issues which the Russell Tribunal deals with, but I'd like to put a question to the witness. You said that you are different from the other witnesses because you are mad. Let me just say that you don't create the impression on me that you are mad. You strike me as being perfectly normal. Although the people who met on the street may not be normal, but mad, even though they may appear to be normal. You said that institutions are not the right place for people of this kind if they are in some way mad, and I would agree with you, and surely everybody else has as well. But my question is to you, I'd like to hear your response, if you permit. Where, or what idea do you have of the way people should be treated?
Thank you for the question. As to your questions about the Russell Tribunal, why don't you see us after the session and we can talk about that. Please.
I'd just like to say that there's not a great deal of difference between the mad and the normal. The question is, to what extent do you exploit the opportunities available to you? Although people who are put away and are given psychopharmaceutical drugs, it's difficult to say, or how can I formulate it? Perhaps I made a mistake in getting caught up in this network. Mostly the mistake is made that you don't accept the freedom for maneuver of the other person. This is not a very good answer, I'm sure, but it just reflects one certain aspect. The question of what these places should look like needs an individual answer. There are various models. There's the Windhorst Project, the Otto Rehr model. Since I've been involved in the anti-stigmatization campaign in Austria and seen the way that things have developed, because totalitarianism is not something which begins in theory, but totalitarianism is really close up to you in the present, and that's what happened to these alternative projects. The RIA project has been converted into a conservative project and the Windhorst project has been disappeared, and all those who swim against the current, whether that's in medicine, and that's why I'm so pleased that Ivan Illich is giving a lecture here. So those who swim against the, or wish to swim against the current, experience what has happened to my face at the moment. I walked into a wall, and that's the way that they may find things developing. You run up against the wall if you try and swim against the current. And these various systems, these models which exist, are silenced and combated. And you would find it very hard to believe what power accrues to the media in this respect. This might sound a bit theoretical what I'm saying, so let me just talk of the suffering that I've experienced. Would you go along with that? I would indict my doctors here. I've depicted the suffering that of the result of neuroleptic drugs again and again. Nobody responded to what I said. People told me this was part of my illness, but that wasn't the case at all. I experienced an inner void as a lack of motivation. So, as I experienced an inner void, a lack of motivation, no enthusiasm for anything whatsoever at all, I felt isolated. Shame I experienced. I felt as if I were locked up everywhere and not forming part of anything, without any sense of orientation or any hold on life, in a literal and figurative sense, lack of orientation, no self-esteem. And believe me, neuroleptic drugs, which reduce tension in your feeling and thinking and everything, they have an impact on your self-esteem. A lot of my friends have experienced this as well. There was no satisfaction from social contacts. I was locked away. I couldn't have any contact with other people. I lost my ability to speak. I had difficulties in concentration. I wasn't able to read newspapers, let alone even a single article in a newspaper. I was worried about not being able to make a new start because I'd lost my courage, and I had felt a sense of incapacity. All I could do was absorb entertainment on a television, and felt suicidal. I was dependent on medicines. I was threatened with recidivism at all times, this Damocles sword of Damocles I referred to earlier on.
Are there questions? Kate?
Ja, Ulrike Kubelski, ich habe zwei Fragen an Sie. Das erste.
Ulrike Kubelski, two questions I want to put to you. If I understood you correctly, the reason why your friends had you committed was that you wanted to become active in a political manner somewhere. Question in this respect, what was your response to this? How did you actually come to grip with things? And have you managed to keep up with these friends, or have you had gained different friends in the meantime? Second question, you talked about situations and things in your life which are probably very humane or quite normal. So why do you use the terms from psychiatry that really fit? As regards the second question, I think that it's very dangerous or very inappropriate to use terms from psychiatry. Perhaps my language has been undermined to a certain extent. I was politically active in response to your first question. I suffered very much from the fact that 800 million people are suffering, and there's no change in that figure to this present day. But today I don't feel that so intensively, as was the case at that time. I concerned myself with the Middle East conflict at that stage, and got into an overexcited state. I had other problems, and things got on top of me, and I couldn't find a solution to things. As I said, I got in this state, and I wasn't a spiritual person at that time. Well, let me just add the following. My psychological disease, let me just say, I listened to a record called Unbehagen by Nina Hagen. At the moment she started singing, God is dead, and so on and so forth, then my psychosis began. And this continued in a massive dimension. I sat in a room where light was on and it was dark outside. It was February in winter, and somebody rang the bell. I'll try to be brief. This condition, this exciting condition I was in, meant that those who were around me were worried, and they promised to take me to Israel, to Jerusalem, and put me in a psychiatric clinic instead. And I wasn't communicating properly from their point of view. And how I managed to come to grip with things? Well, basically, it's a process. And help from outside as well. But it works.
Kate, you had a question.
Well, I wanted to something that you said, and that is, a lot of you haven't taken psychiatric drugs. I bet a lot of the members of the jury are not survivors, have never been hospitalized, and have never had to swallow this garbage. And I want to tell you, if you've never taken this stuff, that it hurts. It hurts a lot. At the worst extreme, it gives you tardive dyskinesia, and you will look crazy all your life, as well as feel crazy. And so they have stigmatized you even physically with this is an irreversible disease of the central nervous system. It's real. It's pathology, you know, disease, not imagination, or not in a supposition, rather. And the other thing is that even if you don't have to take them long enough, or you can skit right out like I always can before the tardive dyskinesia hits you, it's very strong on old people and children. But if you don't take it too long, maybe you won't get it. You won't take the drugs too long, you might not get tardive. But even if you don't get tardive, these drugs hurt like hell because they make it impossible to think. And being unable to think is the most painful condition I think I know of. Of course, it's very painful not to be able to feel as well. They also do that. But being unable to think, that is having a jumble go on in your head. It's a form of torture, of course. The British do it to the Irish in their jails. They play loud music all the time, make you lean against the wall, and so forth. But this fracturing of conceptual thought, of being able to make a sentence, is really hell. And also, a lot of these drugs are forced hallucinogens. They're visionary drugs, and not the ones you want to take for fun. Nobody buys this stuff on the street. And so that you are also, like, you hear voices, fire becomes near, smash, back and forth. Your entire sensory perceptions are deliberately messed with. That is a crime. Even the Inquisition didn't do this to people. They had drugs, too. People, there have always been drugs to make you suffer with. But now it's even legal under the United States Supreme Court to feed them to prisoners against their will. And everywhere psychiatry has fed them to us against their will, in which case they have offended humanity and human rights even worse than the Inquisition did. And believe me, that's hard to do. Because the Inquisition believed that the soul was inviolate, but psychiatry does not.
Kate, it would be really unusual, would it not, if convicted prisoners were the only people in the country who were really immune from forced administration of psychotropic drugs. You pointed out that the Supreme Court lets them be treated. I just want to point out...
It forces them to be treated. I guess they will.
Yes. Well, I meant the same thing. I wanted to point out that everyone ends up in that category. They have simply rejoined the non... the non-convicted population.
Oh, but we like to think that jailbirds got rights.
That's right. That's right. And I let us hope that everyone has those rights. Are there other questions? Because if not, I would like to call the next witness. I call Paulo Cuella.